This show furnished by GS Medical Center and Dr. Gregory A. Smith.
The following show, Truth, Medicine, and Politics, is sponsored, and the views expressed on the show are solely that of the host, which KABC does not necessarily agree with or endorse.
Cutting through the massive disinformation and propaganda to give you the truth about medical and political controversies, this is Truth, Medicine, and Politics with the executive producer of the award-winning film, American Addict, Dr. Gregory A. Smith. To get on air live with your questions or comments, call 800-222-5222. That's 800-222-5222. Or 800-ABC-KABC. And now, Dr. Gregory A. Smith.
Well, it is Saturday night, and that means that I am back, and man, we have a topic for you tonight. I want to start the show tonight with a question, and the question's about sex. It's about cheating. We're going to go even further in terms of talking about cheating to see if cheating is actually natural, and that's right. I said, is cheating natural? So let me tell you the story. I've set this scenario up to many, many patients and some people that I know, and some people that I know that are listening may have heard this story before, so be patient. But the way it goes is that I set up this scenario where there's a man and a woman, husband and wife. They've been married for 8-10 years. They have a couple kids. The guy's been a perfect father, perfect husband. They're sitting there watching TV, and the husband grabs the clicker and turns the TV off, and he says to his wife, he says, listen, there's something I need to tell you. And she goes, what? And he goes, you know, you remember about a year ago when I was in Vegas for this convention, and there was this one night where you got a little upset with me because I didn't answer my phone calls, I didn't respond to the text, and I told you I was in bad reception. And she goes, yeah, I remember that. And then he says to her, well, you know, I was with all my coworkers, there were a bunch of people at the convention, we were drinking, and to make a long story short, you know, I slipped up and I had sex with this woman that was at the convention, and she was married too. We both felt horrible about it. I've been harboring this for a year. It's eating me up inside, and I wanted to tell you the truth. And he just begs for her forgiveness. So I said this, I tell people this, and most of the time, most of the women immediately say that would be it. I would put him out of the house. I would divorce him. I would kick him out. And I'm like, wait a minute, this guy has been a model father, a model husband. He's done nothing wrong, and he's admitted to this. Why would you kick him out? So this leads down this whole rabbit hole. Is monogamy even natural? And I'm going to bring my guest who's in studio in a minute here to talk about this. But when we look at nature, beavers, geese, and wolves seem to be about the only mammals that are pretty much monogamous. That's about 95 to 97% of other mammals, which include humans, have not biologically been monogamous. So there's many experts now saying that monogamy is simply not natural, that it's just a recent society or a social creation to be monogamous. And I know there are women out there listening right now saying, well, you're just saying that because it gives men a reason to cheat. But is it just an excuse for men to cheat? Or are men, and to some extent women, are they fighting their natural instincts to stay monogamous? We're going to ask my guest tonight, and he's in studio, and it's Zat Baraka. And Zat is a premier men's personal coach. He's helped so many men in terms of their relationships, their careers, just their goals in life. And he's done a lot of group and one-to-one sessions with men. His website is zatbaraka.com. That's ZATBARAKA.com. Also, the newmasculineprogram.com. Newmasculineprogram.com. Zat, I want to thank you for being here tonight. Thanks for coming in the studio.
Yeah, pleasure to be here. Good conversation. Good topic.
Yeah, well, just one of the beginning. So you've done a lot of one-to-one men's coaching, and it's hard to believe this doesn't come up where men come to you and they've either had this problem or they've done it, they're trying to not do it. What's your overall feeling about monogamy in men?
I mean, it's obviously a big issue. Many men are challenged with it. I've had, even in my much younger life, I went through the pain of the experience myself of being in in a relationship with infidelity. And yeah, it's a very challenging and very painful thing for everyone involved. And is it prevalent? I would say it's pretty prevalent. I mean, at least if men aren't doing it, they're struggling in that they want to do it.
So are men just fighting? And again, I don't want to just say men, but you're an expert in this. So that's why we're sort of focusing on men, because obviously it takes two to tango, unless it's a gay relationship. You know, but it's the same dynamics here. So there are definitely women that are cheating, but there's just seems like lately there's been all these experts saying we're just fighting human nature.
I mean, I'm not an expert necessarily on monogamy, but I have done my research and I have been around the communities. For example, there's a lot of pretty good information and logic, I could say, in the polyamory community, if you're familiar with that term, people that are in chosen non-monogamous relationships. Some say monogamy is a human creation. It's a concept made through the church. Mm-hmm. As a way to craft and create our social structures in a way that, you know, best suits those in power. So there's a lot more than just that, but there's also the evolutionary biological implications about that we're not really built to be monogamous beings.
But we have choice, and you mentioned this before we went on air, that we evolve, we have choice. So if a man comes to you and he doesn't want to do this, he's married, he's having these urges or this issue, what can you tell men that are listening that may have this issue in their life?
First thing is I get clear on what it is they want for themselves. And so if what they want for themselves is to, and most, I'd say every single man I've worked with, they come to me for, very similar reasons. But they want to be men of integrity. They want to be on purpose with their life. They want to feel on point. They want to move through any internal challenges that keep them limited and unhappy and suffering. And so, for example, if a man says, "Yeah, I want," a lot of men struggle with doing what they say, having integrity in their word. A lot of men struggle with this. I find that that they want to be able to always be in integrity with their word and not speak untruths, just to manipulate a situation. Mm-hmm. So I'll ask a man what he wants, and if this is part of what he wants, if his vision for himself is to be a high integrity man, then we need to look at, okay, so you're unhappy in your relationship, you have emotional dissatisfaction, you have sexual dissatisfaction. Is going out and being with and cheating on your wife or your partner, is that in integrity with the vision that you have for yourself, the kind of man you want to be? Mm-hmm. And no man says, oh yeah, that's absolutely in alignment. If the man were to say that, I probably wouldn't be working with them. Mm-hmm. Because I'm not a therapist. I work with men that want to up-level and upgrade their lives.
Yeah, that's important. That's an important difference. I'm glad you made that up because there are, and we, again, before we went on the air, I was talking about years ago when Brian Gumbel was still on the Today Show and he was going through that horrific divorce, and his wife brought out that term I had never heard before, that he was a serial adulterer, which was, it was a funny term that she said that, and now people use it all the time. And so there's a difference between someone that just doesn't seem to really care, because that is a lack of integrity, right? If it's just happening over and over again, versus maybe someone that, like the example that I gave, that it was a slip up, so to speak.
Yeah. Well, I think I want to go back to your first point. I don't think we finished that, which is around is monogamy an unnatural thing?
Right.
And I think whether it is or it isn't, as you said, it's choice. So just like I was sharing with you earlier, we have our evolutionary biological impulse to fight, to protect ourselves when that fear stimulus is triggered, a fight or flight. But we're not, or at least we're hoping that we're not going around fighting wherever we are, right? And so it's about choice, and it's about becoming a person that creates more compassion and more love in the world. You have a choice, or you can go out and you can fight everyone that you see. And it's the same with monogamy. And that is, even though there may be some programming, you know, there's some statistics that I think it's something like 95% of all men actually cannot avert their eyes from an attractive woman. There is a biological programming there. Because when you look at breasts, it triggers a certain piece in the brain, endorphin, serotonin, you know, kicks in. And so we get addicted to that. And so there's it's an involuntary thing.
So 95% of men can't resist
something like that number. We cannot avert our eyes from an attractive woman. Right. And so men even have guilt around that, or sometimes women, you know, get upset about that. But kind of went off track there. But
maybe this is why a lot of men are wearing dark sunglasses. I don't know, so they can't see their eyes.
You nailed it. You nailed it. You absolutely nailed it. Yeah, that's true.
Well, I guess this is a very good point, because this comes up all the time with and again, I do addiction medicine and chronic pain management. But as I said before we came on the air, people tell me all kinds of things, and almost invariably those issues enter in and affect men's sex life. It's not just the pain that they're in, but erectile dysfunction, which has become tremendously common. All these things, which I think also can lead to men sort of straying. So if we put this to bed, I think we can we conclude, I'll ask you that it may not necessarily be biologically in our DNA, so to speak, evolutionary, that we are monogamous, but as we've evolved as a society, as we've evolved as people, and we care about the people that we're with, because there's a lot of damage that goes along that. And you said that you experienced it, and I have too. You know, I've done this, you know, I'm a guilty also in the past, and so it does hurt a lot of people, and if you really care about people, you don't want to hurt them. So is it a choice that when we talk to men about it, shouldn't they look at what are the consequences of their actions and not just listen to their genes, so to speak, or their biology?
Oh God, yeah. Yeah, and the other, yeah, absolutely, listening to the consequences.
Okay, well.
So absolutely, listening, yeah, the consequences of their action, but another big thing to consider is, and I see this a lot, is that when a man cheats, I forgot the statistics on it, but
right.
A high percentage of men feel horribly guilty, and or if they don't consciously
right.
feel guilty, that there's an internal damaging that's happening, because you know you're out of integrity, you know you're out of alignment, and you know that's not the right decision to make. And so even if you're not consciously aware that, wow, this is really hurting me, there's you still have a judgment against yourself, and you walk around with that, and it colors how you interact with the world. So if you're walking around thinking, well, what a jerk I am, what an idiot I am, how right. horrible of me that I did this,
right.
It may not be conscious, but it's a filter through how you see the world. It's just like if someone has low self-esteem, it colors how you interact with life, right?
Right.
And so that's really damaging. And I'm not saying this because I think that in itself will deter men from doing it, but it really adds, when you cheat, when a man does cheat, it just creates more suffering for himself.
Yeah, yeah. Now I know that you deal with I know your specialty is dealing with men, but just what is your opinion when women cheat? Is it the same dynamic, or is it a different situation when a woman cheats versus a man?
I mean, I don't think it's any different in terms of the effect.
Yeah.
But some of the reasons, I you know, one thing that I talk about, which is an interesting thing, is looking at why, what drives a woman to cheat, what drives a man to cheat. There are some different factors in there. One of the highest, one of the things that most drives a woman to cheat is when she has a man who is not present. So a man who has a lot of presence with this woman, women tend to feel more emotionally fulfilled, and so that's a big driver. one of the things that the big driver for men and why they cheat is when their women are critical, criticism.
Hmm.
Men are really, I mean, we're all sensitive to criticism, but men particularly get affected by women. So men can call out other men. Like I can go to one of my friends and say, dude, this is not cool what you did. I think this, and this was terrible and lame. And he'll take it from me, taking it from a man. But when a woman gives feedback, it hits, because we're tapping into a little bit of maternal relationship and how men are affected by feminine criticism. There's a 50% of men, it's reported, that cheat do it because of emotional dissatisfaction. It's only around 8 to 10% that cheat because of sexual dissatisfaction, which is interesting, you know. Yeah. So if women have sex in order to have intimacy.
Right.
Or they need intimacy in order to have sex.
Right.
Men
right.
use sex as a way to create intimacy. And so there's the big disconnect there. And a lot of times when couples are not having sex regularly or they're not having intimate sex, both are unsatisfied. And you know, they're really stuck. They don't know what to do. And sometimes, and definitely for the men that I've talked to, they just crave, like I said, 50% it's emotional dissatisfaction. Men want emotional intimacy as well.
Well, you know, I'm glad that you said that, because I think there's a big misconception that women think that men cheat just because they can't keep it in their pants, so to speak.
Because they're dogs.
Right, exactly. They see a pretty woman, they just can't help themselves. And there is an big emotional component. And I think it's true that when a woman in a man's life breaks them down, it's a different type of breakdown. It really hits the ego, I think, a little bit different than another guy saying those same type
of things. It does. It does. And in some of my men's groups, you know, what men actually want once they get past kind of the outer facade, what men actually want is honest and critical feedback from other men. Because it helps us. Who are you going to go to help you when you're confused, when you don't know what to do, and you're like, dude, I need you to tell me the truth? You're not going to go to a woman. I mean, maybe sometimes. Okay, right. I'm not going to say blanket statement, but we go to our brothers.
Mm-hmm.
And men who don't have that, I find, they're alone. And this is, now we're getting into this whole territory of why men go it alone.
Right.
If they don't have real close, trustworthy brothers, they go it alone. And when you go it alone, now we're talking about heart disease and cortisol levels raising and high blood pressure and that sort of thing.
A lot of stress.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of stress. My guest tonight is Zat Baraka. He is an expert with men, working with men, personal relationships, sexual relationships. If you want to call in, it's 800-222-5222, 800-222-5222, 800-222-5222. ABC, KBC. We're going to talk about more things here, but we're just finishing up on monogamy and why do men cheat, and is it a men's fault? I mean, I've had guys tell me, it's not my fault, it's my biology, I can't help it. We're not supposed to be monogamous. So we're sort of saying that, yeah, there's a biological situation here, but you do have a choice. Now, I want to ask you, because this is on the same line, Zat, that when you're working with men that come to you with sexual issues, maybe that they're just not performing like they want to, maybe they're having some kind of disconnection with their partner. And let me throw a second question in there. Is there, do you work with gay men or people?
Absolutely.
Is there a difference between a man in a gay relationship versus a heterosexual?
Good question. Yeah. I found not. And so, for example, when I'm teaching in public workshops, it's usually more heterosexual men, but I have many gay clients and many gay men that come into the workshops. And one of the things I say is when I'm referring to the woman or to the feminine, it can be applicable in a gay relationship too, because there generally tends to be that polarized dynamic in a gay relationship too. I can't say every time, but there usually is. Someone that tends to be, you know, taking on more of the masculine energy and someone who tends to be more of the nurturing, you know, planner, like taking on more of that, what tends to be traditional, I'm saying traditional feminine roles, not that they have to be, not the feminine woman has to be, you know, the nurturer or the planner.
It's interesting. So it's a very similar, whether it's a heterosexual or a homosexual relationship. And what about what is the more common issues that men are having from a sexual standpoint with their partners that you see or you counsel them, or that you help them with, I should say.
So, you know, honestly, one of the biggest issues that I see when I'm in groups of 100, 150 guys, and I'll sometimes divide the room up according to some certain criteria that I set. And what I see is a majority of the men tend to have this challenge, which is kind of falls into the camp of nice guy syndrome. And that kind of what we'll say nice guy syndrome, people pleaser, tend to be what I'll say as less heated in their desires. So men who tend to have hot desire in sexuality and in life, not to say that someone who has people pleaser nice guy syndrome isn't going to want to be successful and have a lot of internal drive, but men who tend to be people pleasers, who tend to have more colder desire, I have guys that say, and I see a woman and I don't have that big drive that says, oh, I want to be with her. I have a lot of guys that say that. So going back to my point of a majority of men have this tend to have this nice guy syndrome. And in those relationships, in the bedroom, in sex, they tend to be more the receiver as opposed to the initiator.
The nice guys.
The nice guys the women tend to be more the initiators in those sexual relationships than the nice guy syndrome guys. Not all, but the men that I talk to, they say, yeah, I tend to, she kind of drives the sexual conversation. She's the initiator. Mm-hmm. She makes a lot of the decisions in the house. And so now we're getting into the topic of how masculinity has changed through the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, and up till now. And so it's an interesting topic because we're in a really interesting time right now in how men are living their masculinity. And so I don't know if you're interested in hearing more about this.
No, I think it's very interesting because the masculinity from years ago, I mean, the way that women were treated in circa 1950s, 1960s, even in the 70s versus now is really night and day. Are you saying that men are less masculine or less macho, so to speak, now than they were 30, 40 years ago?
We absolutely know that in the 50s, the golden age, you know, like the popular definitions of masculinity, men were dominant. They were proud of war. You know, they were they were the men of the household. They were the decision makers. And then as we get in through the 60s, men as head of household kind of imploded. And that kind of started to go away. And World War II gave way to Vietnam. And as that came through and then feminism started happening, there's a funny little saying. There was a backlash against men being like the tough macho John Wayne guy, and the saying is that a woman needs a bicycle like a fish, a woman needs a man like a fish needs a bicycle. And so this is kind of it's a silly quote, but I forgot the name of the book that was in. But what happened was from the 50s in the 60s and in the 70s, as men were kind of, their masculinity was squashed through the feminist movement, men swung way over to the other side, and that's where this kind of new age, what they call the kind of the new agey sensitive guy, started to happen.
Sensitive guy.
And so this is where. Yeah.
Do you believe that the feminist movement was started? Like some people say, oh, the CIA funded Ms. Magazine and they like wanted the family to, they want, number one, of course, they wanted two taxpayers to contribute to the illegal Federal Reserve.
Well, before he's answered the question, yes. We're up against the break. We're going to take a quick break. My guest tonight is Zat Baraka. We're talking about men's sexuality. We're talking about cheating. We're talking about monogamy. We're talking about all things sex, what it has to do with men. And we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to Truth, Medicine, and Politics with Dr. Gregory A. Smith. To get on the air live with your questions or comments, call 800-222-5222. That's 800-222-5222 or 800-ABC-KABC. We'll be right back right after this break.
Come immerse yourself in Bhakti. Bhakti Fest, the nation's premier yoga, music, and personal growth festival. Join us September 7th through the 11th in the high desert of Joshua Tree. Bhakti Fest, featuring world-renowned yoga teachers, sacred musicians, and workshop leaders. Come immerse yourself in four non-stop days of yoga, song, dance, bliss, love, and laughter. Bring your family and camp out beneath the stars, or stay at one of our many accommodations. For festival details and to buy tickets now, log on to bhaktifest.com. That's bhaktifest.com. BHAKTIFEST.com. Bhaktifest, the experience of a lifetime or perhaps many.
This is Charles Osgood. Go down the pain relief aisle and you'll see a lot of different pain relievers. But have you tried Salonpas Deep Relieving Gel? It is fast melting, quick absorbing, penetrating deep relief. Perfect for sore muscles or joints. Salonpas Deep Relieving Gel has three powerful active ingredients that work for up to 8 full hours. In fact, nothing else you can buy is proven stronger or more effective against pain. Look for the tall blue box next to the Salonpas patches. Salonpas Deep Relieving Gel.
If you have hard water, the lime scale not only leaves white spots, it clogs pipes and breaks down appliances, costing you hundreds of dollars in energy and wear. Eliminate lime scale and other water issues like brown staining, bad odors, and lead with HydroCare water products available from Wave Home Solutions. Wave's affordable systems don't use salts or chemicals. You'll love the way your water tastes, smells, and looks. Satisfaction guaranteed. For more information, go to goodclearwater.com. That's goodclearwater.com.
I'm Nick Soboleski, a SelectQuote agent with a true story that could save you hundreds of dollars a year. A woman named Linda just called. Her husband, Ray, has a $300,000 group life insurance policy, but is changing jobs and can't take it with him. Well, I impartially shopped the highly rated term life insurance companies we represent and found Ray, who is 41 and takes medication to control his cholesterol, a 10-year, $500,000 policy for under $26 a month. That's almost twice the coverage for less than half of what he had paid. If SelectQuote hasn't shopped for your life insurance, you're probably paying too much.
For your free quote, call 1-800-597-4816. That's 1-800-597-4816. 1-800-597-4816. Or go to SelectQuote.com. We shop, you save. Get full details on the example policy at selectquote.com/commercials. Your price could vary depending on your health issuing company and other factors. Not available in all states.
You go to the dentist and find out you need a root canal or a periodontist, and that means another appointment with another doctor at another location, maybe in a couple of days or weeks. Well, now there's a much easier and affordable way. Dr. Messer Kani has put together a team of experts at LA Dentists Group, a collaborative dentistry practice, the newest field of dentistry, that provides a prosthodontist, periodontist, orthodontist, general cosmetic and sedation dentist, medical doctor, and anesthesiologist all under one roof. For anxious patients, they do safe sedation. They do implants, full mouth restoration, teeth straightening, smile makeovers with porcelain veneers and crowns, all under one roof. LA Dentist Group utilizes a 3D imaging scanner, so they can save you time by pre-planning treatments. They even have their own lab to personally supervise your final restoration. To schedule your appointment with Dr. Messer Kani and LA Dentist Group, call LA 888-95-TEETH, 888-95-TEETH, or ladentistgroup.com.
Cars, trucks, motorcycles. If it's got a motor, we've got your man. If there was ever a time you needed an automotive expert like Leon Kaplan at your side, it's now. The Motor Man. Sunday mornings at 8 on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Want the truth? You're listening to Truth, Medicine, and Politics with Dr. Gregory A. Smith. To get on the air live with your questions or comments, call 800-222-5222. That's 800-222-5222 or 800-ABC-KABC. And now, Dr. Gregory A. Smith.
And we are back. And my guest tonight is Zat Baraka. That's ZatBaraka.com, ZatBaraka.com. I'll give out all of his websites when we get towards the end here. But we're talking about men and their sexuality. And really, Zat works with men in groups, one-to-ones, expert in this field. Because there's a lot of issues that men are having right now. We know that. We've been talking about is monogamy natural? Is cheating really something that men do because they want to do it or they can't help it from a biological standpoint? But before we took the break, we were really starting to get into the way the masculine is defined has changed. So we know back in, you know, John Wayne times, 40s and the 50s, as a tough guy, the woman was barefoot and naked in the kitchen and that type of thing. And things have obviously changed. So, Zat, I want to go back to that. How has masculinity changed from, say, 30, 40 years ago versus now?
So I think the first thing that's important in the work that I do, I say that there is no prescription in the gender binary. Like, there's no prescription for what makes someone masculine or what makes someone feminine. Because now we're really getting into... now we're getting into boxes and concepts of how one has to be. And so the way that I frame it is there are some naturally occurring traits that you see in men that one would describe as masculine. And also in doing personal growth work, like in my online men's program, we look at what are some qualities, masculine qualities for you that you would want to embody more of? And so there's not a prescription for how one has to be. But example, when I was talking about the nice guy syndrome, a lot of those guys will say similar things. They want to be more confident, right? They want to be more expressive. They want to be able to speak up for themselves. They want to be more assertive. They want to be more, a big one is being very decisive. Decisiveness. So I see this a lot with guys who tend to fall into this nice guy camp. They don't have the ability to make cutting and solid decisions. There's some wishy-washy.
But doesn't that cut into masculinity? You know, you hear the old saying, nice guys finish last, and guys that are so nice, aren't they? There's a perception that those are the kind of guys that get run over by women, that they're too nice.
Absolutely. And a lot of men, their personal growth work is in healing those old wounds around the mother. We tend to see that men who have that nice guy thing tend to have overbearing mothers. It's very common. And this is not about blaming mothers or shaming anyone. It's about, you know, we each have our own families, and we have our upbringing, and we have the things that we went through, and it shaped who we are. And so, I had a guy that I worked with once that had a very, very terribly controlling mother. And in his marriage, he mimicked that, which is kind of standard Western psychology, right? If you look at all the personal growth work and all the books, spiritual psychology and so on, we have dovetailing issues with our partner. So if you have a guy who has an overbearing mother, he'll tend to get into a relationship with an overbearing woman. So this guy in particular, his wife was horrible to him. Really, really just emasculating every day, calling him names, things like, what kind of man are you? He did have erectile dysfunction in their sexual relationship, and they stopped having sex. And so the thing that he wanted more than anything was to be able to stand in his confidence again, be decisive, stand up for himself, because he couldn't even stand up to her. He would just, I don't know what the word is, he would just fold.
But is it maybe she's just not the right woman for him?
So that's one way to look at it. That's one way to look at it. It depends on whether both people have made a conscious choice that they want to make it work and they want to create an intimate relationship. And so after some work together, he finally got to the place where he said, you know what? He built up some confidence. He looked at his mother relationship. He did some healing work around that in himself and clearing up some old issues that he wasn't even aware of. And he finally said to her, I've had enough. I want a divorce. Mm-hmm. And he left. And in that leaving, she turned around and she said, I'm very sorry. I see now what I've done. And they got back together, mm-hmm. and they continue
sort of shocked her out of it.
It did. But I guess the point is around this vision of masculinity, and part of what's happened, as I was talking about, like through the feminist movement, as women became stronger and men kind of went to the other extreme, more to the kind of new age sensitive guy, becoming more sensitive. And what a lot of people and great teachers and writers in this work talk about is that men lost their, I don't know if I can say the word on there, they lost their strength. They lost their drive.
Their cojones.
They lost that. And so that was kind of predominant for a long time until women started seeing this and women started speaking up. And this happened through the women's empowerment movement, and it happened through the feminist movement, as women became executives. They started financially taking responsibility for their own life, and women's wages were slowly going up, not quite there yet. But as women became more empowered, men kind of fell way behind, because men weren't doing, the men's movement wasn't really strong like the women's movement was. Like the feminist movement and the women's movement, the empowerment movement, got really strong because women are objectified, they're marginalized and all these things. So they've been gathering since, way back, right? Since what was the thing in the 20s called the suffragette movement?
Yeah.
So where are we now? It's a really interesting place to look.
But what about, you hear the, when you look at it from the more sinister, the more conspiracy part of this, is that there's been a deliberate
dismantling.
Well, yeah. I don't know if it's dismantling as much as it's been to, on purpose, to sort of emasculate men or make them more and more feminine, or get to a point where we don't even where there's a blurring of the genders, so you don't have clear gender roles anymore. And this is a way to sort of break down the family structure, or break down the social structure. I mean, there's been a lot of that put forward. I mean, when you don't have clear roles, because then when you say what's masculine, what's feminine, I mean, you have to sort of start somewhere, right? I think people were raised a certain way to think this is the way a man should be.
There's natural expressions of that.
Hasn't that gotten blurred though?
Absolutely.
So is that a good thing or a bad thing?
It's a good question. I think it's a good thing in that it's breaking down everything. Breaking down those gender roles has done a lot for women, right? Wouldn't you say?
But what about men? Yes.
I would say there's a lot of women who would like to have a traditional marriage and be taken care of and be able to stay with their children.
Absolutely.
And nurture their children and kind of make curtains and soup and have the choice. Have the choice, though.
So my focus is on how to help men to be in relationship in a way where they feel happy, empowered, strong, fulfilled. And it's, so I can't say whether these blurring of gender roles is damaging or not. There's a whole movement on what I'll call on the right, which is called the MRA, the men's rights, or MRM, men's rights movement. And I'm definitely not aligned with that at all. They're from my perspective, they're definitely more misogynistic. They have a lot of complaints against women. They feel that men are marginalized. They feel that men in the courtroom in regards to their kids are being taken advantage of, and that men and masculinity is under attack. And I just don't see that. Men have had the reins from the beginning of time.
Who's heading that movement? I don't know.
Men have had the reins of power. They still have the reins of power, right?
Well, there are women who abuse the court systems and are very, very exploitative of...
I don't disagree.
Of male resources and money, and kind of exploit the relationship in that way.
I don't disagree. I mean, there's shadow sides on both sides. This is not all about men being bad. Absolutely. That's not. I mean, there's what I call, there's shadow on both sides. There's some negative aspects on both sides.
Is it difficult, do you think, for... Or do you find when you work with men, is it difficult for men to commit? Do you run into a lot of men that are in relationships for a long period of time and they just aren't able to go to the next level? Or they'll get into relationships with women, the last, again, this could be for
very common
for homosexual couples also, but they keep moving on. When it gets to a certain point where it's got to sort of, you got to do something or not, they move on.
Absolutely.
Why is that?
Because how can I put this? Let's for a minute. I'd like to look at the old model of masculinity, because the old model of masculinity is what still predominates, and it still affects men, because our fathers were trained by their fathers, and their fathers are trained by their fathers. And so, just to answer your question, yes, that's definitely a big issue, one of the issues for men, because men, one of their challenges is fear of intimacy. Hmm. I mean, if you put 10 women in a room and 10 men and you do a little research, I mean, there's going to be some women who also have intimacy issues, but men are not trained to feel. They're not trained to cry. They're not taught. Nothing's modeled for them. They haven't been initiated into emotional literacy.
Well, sometimes it's even the opposite, right? Often they're told you're weak if you cry, or you're weak if you show emotion. So a lot of men, it's actually the opposite.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, so the old model of masculinity, disconnected to the earth. We live in concrete jungles now, and there's a disconnection. If we look at indigenous tribes and that are connected, their feet are on the earth. Now, for some guys, they may think I'm sounding like kind of new agey hippie guy here, but we are totally disconnected from our natural rhythms. We're disconnected from the earth, and that disconnection from the earth itself is a big issue in why men have challenges being more sensitive and being more intuitive. Because if you look at what's the uniform of the man, it's this thing around his neck that's choked right at the throat that disconnects his head from his heart. That's what the tie is, and so this is how we're trained. So, old model is disconnected from earth, disconnected from our bodies, fear of introspection, fear of intimacy, repression of emotion. And this all adds up to what so many men are challenged with, which is addiction to power and wealth, loss of compassion,
illness,
for fear of not maintaining this kind of this false sense of security. And so this is the work that I do, and because I've done this work on myself, and it's so rewarding when men have these little breakthroughs. It's like, oh my God, I can cry. It's okay to be pissed off. So maybe their father said being angry is not okay, because maybe their father had repressed anger. And so they live their life with this deep anger. They don't even know it's there. But it's always this underlying kind of pressure, this internal pressure that's happening for guys.
Is this what happened to you? I mean, is this how you came to do this?
Yeah.
Is that you were going through some of these issues yourself?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I was raised in a house with a lot of anger. Regular, good, middle-class family. I had three brothers and my father. So a lot of testosterone in the house. My dad and four boys, and then my mom. And there was a lot of anger, and there was a lot of fighting, and there was a lot of arguing. And no one ever said, this isn't the way you should be in life. That's what was modeled for us. Right. And so then when I had to face my anger in my first big relationship, in my first marriage, it was, I noticed that this is a very painful existence to be in. It's painful for everyone around me. And I had to make a change, because I was depressed. At one point, I had lost everything. Mm-hmm. I was sleeping in a car. I didn't have, I didn't have anything. I was just this angry dude. Mm-hmm. But I've always been a guy on the spiritual path. So that kind of driver was always there for me. Like, I got to change this. I'm not just going to continue blaming the world and blaming those around me. I got to make a change. And so, I mean, this is 25, 30 years ago, but I really, engaged on that path and have had these breakthroughs. And anger is still always with me. It's still always with us. But obviously, the way that you respond to it is completely different.
What about your brothers? I mean, did your brothers have the same issues, or have they worked through it too? Or
I think they've all worked through it in their own way. And they're all good, aware guys. They're maybe not as into this work as I am. But no, they all have healthy, good families now. This is one area that's it's a big area for men to work with. because all men tend to have anger, whether it's overt or covert. They have it. It's overt or covert. It's either repressed or it's out there. I have so many guys that are, when we start doing the work, we start talking about anger, and they say, "Oh, I don't really have anger." And then about 6 weeks later, they're like, "Oh my God, I can't believe what's happened here." You know, they discover that this has been driving their whole life.
How you know, you obviously have dealt with a lot of guys, and you're having lots of people do this. Is it just a symptom of our society that men are just not being, I don't want to say raised right, but you can't get from your father what your father didn't have. So is this just passing down sort of failure? And that's why there's so many men that have these issues?
I mean, I say this is the biggest epidemic on this planet. If I were to name it, I would say unhealthy masculine modeling.
Yeah.
And it's across the board in all areas of our life. So sex, of course, relationship, how we relate to money and power, it's across the board. And so I think it's the biggest epidemic. And then when we look at, like, an important area for me is to in helping to stem global violence against women, this also is a mass epidemic, and it's really rooted in these old masculine models. But I think I just want to be really clear. This is not about, I'm a man, this is not about blaming men. This is about looking at how can we evolve our planet, and why is our Earth in the condition that it's in, and why is big corporations and oil and everything driving the path that we're on this planet. And it's because of these things we're talking about. Yeah. If I were to take George Bush, right? George Bush, the
George W.
George W. Yeah. If I were to have worked with him before he was president, let's say, and we were to work for, let's say, a year together, and we were to get into some of his conditionings that he got from his father and from his neighbors and from his school and from his teachers and his friends, and we were to go in and do some deep inner work around that, at some point he would begin to heal these different aspects of himself and the way that he's showing up in the world, he would see that war and power, he would have compassion would be a natural outflow of the work. And it's a lot harder to go bomb thousands of people when you have birthed compassion and forgiveness inside of yourself.
Well, how has this played out in Muslim culture? Not to hit a hornet's nest, but I mean, it seems to be a very misogynistic culture. Well, that culture particularly doesn't seem to honor their women.
Every culture. I'm definitely not going to touch that. I don't agree. I think it's every culture.
I think that when you look at wars in general and the violence that's going on all around the world, because right now we're seeing violence all over Europe, Middle East, United States, it's everywhere. You can sort of explain it from the things that you're saying, because repressed anger, men being
poor modeling,
macho, and all this is part of this posturing that causes some of this stuff. Because most of these skirmishes, these wars, it's some people at the top that's driving this and followers that are carrying it out.
Yeah, you know, what the saying is, I don't know if I'll say it exactly right, but anytime someone bombs another person or attacks another person or fights, even gets in a physical altercation in a bar, anytime that happens, what you're actually doing is you're fighting to maintain your stance as a victim. Right? So, oh, you looked at me wrong. Oh, you stepped on my shoes. Oh, you came in, you flew into my airspace. You're too close to my country's border. Whatever the thing is, you're basically defending yourself as being a victim. And in personal development work, part of the work is to remove that victim from yourself, because you can achieve, you can create whatever you want. When you have that victim programming, you're very limited in your not only capacity to handle stress, but also you're very limited in your ability to manifest and to create and to be successful when you're defending your victim stance.
We only have a few minutes left, and I want to give you an opportunity because I know you have some unique things that are going on that's coming up that you're offering. If there's there are guys out there listening that need help, because you know I always want to reach out and say, what can we do for people that are listening and they're struggling with some of these issues? Because there's clearly a lot of men struggling with these issues. So
yes.
Tell us a little bit about what you're
doing.
Well,
number one, I'm going to be at this festival, Bhakti Fest, which is an amazing festival out in Joshua Tree in the desert. It's in September. It's September 7th through 12th. It's really an amazing experience. It's, I guess you'd consider it a transformational festival. One of the beautiful things about it is it's really a family festival, free from drugs and alcohol, vegetarian food there. But there's countless workshops from brilliant teachers, yoga, music, devotional music. And it's just a really amazing festival. There's nothing else like it. It's like this big conscious festival out in the desert. So that's Bhakti Fest, B-H-A-K-T-I, Bhakti Fest. I'm going to be there teaching a couple men's workshops and a co-ed conscious relationship workshop. And they're very unique workshops because people get an opportunity to actually do inner work, like look at some of their habits and patterns and the ways that they show up. Why do I keep having relationships that end after 3 months? Why am I in a relationship where there's not truth and honesty, and we're just, you know, going through the motions every day, but neither of us are fulfilled. All the programming for men around sex, like what is a, how can a man really fulfill his woman if he hasn't been trained in how to be a good lover? So we're going to be covering a lot of the stuff out at Bhakti Fest, and I definitely recommend people go out to it. It's a very, lots of yoga. Some of the top teachers in the world will be there.
What about your sites? I mean, I gave
my
out
sites.
Your, yeah,
yes.
I gave out your. So, where can people reach you if they wanted to actually do some one to one or group with
sure.
you personally?
So my personal website is Zat Baraka, ZatBaraka, and then I have my men's online program coming up. It's a live online program. Starting October 3rd, it's a more economical way for people to work with me. One-on-one requires, you know, a certain commitment, but you can be anywhere in the world. I have guys from all over the world, Europe, it's live, so it's not pre-recorded, and it's a very powerful way for you to do inner work and look at ways that you can improve your life, become more successful, how you relate to sex, relationship, money, and your life purpose. I have a host of amazing guest teachers like Marianne Williamson, Mickey Willis, Kyle Cease, who's a Comedy Central comedian and transformational teacher, and then my co-teacher Brian Reeves, who's an amazing viral blogger and a brilliant guy. He's my co-facilitator.
How long is it like over so many weeks?
Yeah, it's 6 weeks, and basically what you're doing is you meet all these men. And it's this collective of men that are really focused on wanting to improve their life, clear out some old unhealthy ways of being that have limited them in their relationships, in their sex, in their success, and in their money. And we join together a couple times a week for 6 weeks. And there's a lot of interaction, there's a lot of sharing, and there's a lot of deep internal kind of inquiry work. But it's really well held. And we have all kinds of guys. We have guys in the military, we have doctors and lawyers, and then we also have guys that are, you know, already kind of maybe on the path already and have done some of this work. But it's open to beginners to advanced men.
Well, I think that's great that it's online because it makes it available to everybody.
Everyone.
They don't have to travel. So
I've had guys in tiny little towns in Ireland and in Germany. So newmasculineprogram.com.
Perfect. Listen, Zat, thank you for coming in studio tonight. It's been your Saturday night. Listen, if you've missed any of this, you can always hear the show again on drgregorysmith.com. That's drgregorysmith.com. As always, I'm going to tell you to go see The Big Lie, American Addict 2. The Big Lie, American Addict 2, the second movie I produced, the follow-up to American Addict, is on Amazon, iTunes. It's everywhere. So check that movie out. It will change your life. Listen, we will be back next Saturday night. Zat, thanks again for coming
in. My pleasure. Thank you so much.
Please, please, if you're a guy, get some help because it sounds like we need it. I'll see you guys next Saturday night.
Truth, Medicine, and Politics was a sponsored show, and the views expressed on the show were solely that of the host, which KABC does not necessarily agree with or endorse.
This show furnished by GS Medical Center and Dr. Gregory A. Smith.